talking over the last couple of weeks to agencies and currencies about the impact of the COVID-19 crisis on media measurement, Ipsos have actually put out a white paper. It's called Keeping the Show on the Road, Audience Measurement in Times of Crisis. And I'm lucky enough to be speaking to its author, Andrew Green, obviously of Ipsos. So, Andrew, firstly, to provide some context, what impact is the crisis having specifically on Ipsos's clients with regard to the currency surveys across your markets?
Well, quite a lot, as you can imagine. So if we take readership studies, publisher studies, we're doing something like 35 countries. We should be measuring readership sort of during the year in about 35 countries. And of those countries, I had a little look and realized that 25 of them were either face-to-face entirely or partly. So clearly face-to-face interviewing has stopped almost everywhere. So it's had quite a big impact on our measurement during March and April particularly, and now moving into May. And radio, where again, we should be measuring in about 24 countries right now, 12 of them are running. So those are the ones that we're doing using CATI in the main. And then of course out of home measurement has pretty much the travel survey part of that in the UK and some other markets has ground to a halt, mainly because no one's really traveling around very much, and even so advertising has dropped precipitously in out of home media, so they don't really want to run a study, so it's had a lot of effect is the answer to that. On a lot of our surveys. In the UK, we stopped all of them, Root, Barb, Establishment Survey, PAMCO, and Raja have all halted fieldwork for the time being.
And presumably, obviously, there is a big impact on Ipsos itself, because I think your rivals would probably acknowledge that you are arguably the leader in face-to-face field force, high-quality face-to-face field work around the world, and I think it actually accounts for about a third of all your turnover before the crisis, when a lot of companies have more or less given up on doing it. Does that mean that you've been disproportionately hit, do you think, as a company by this?
I don't know how the other companies have been hit. Certainly we've made some announcements to the Bourse in Paris about that. So yes, we have been hit, but I mean, not every country is very big in face-to-face interviewing. I mean, the UK is. The US less so, Asia Pacific is, Africa is, you know, a lot of those countries are face-to-face kind of countries, Latin America even a little bit, but I don't know whether we've been affected more or less than other companies, but we've certainly have been affected and quite a lot.
Are you discussing, in those countries where things are on hiatus, are you discussing what measures you may be able to put into place to ensure reporting continuity? Or is there almost a feeling in the market that things are so weird that they'd almost rather not measure them and wait until things get back to normal? I guess there's the balance between the need to understand what the hell's going on versus the fear that what's going on is not normal and advertisers are not advertising much at the moment.
Well, I think, yes, you've encapsulated it in a nutshell, really. So we have stopped measuring in some places, and in some of those same places, the UK being a good example, we've already been discussing with our various JIC clients how we might test alternative methods. But the plan in general is to get back to face-to-face interviewing as soon as feasibly possible. So I think we're penciling in July to resume face-to-face interviewing. But we don't really know what that face-to-face interviewing will look like. It probably won't be the same as it was before the crisis, certainly not in the short term. So, you know, we might be, for instance, in replacing in-home interviewing with doorstep interviewing. We might be equipping interviewers with PPE, you know, with masks and gloves and sterilizing their laptops and things like that. So it might be a different form of face-to-face interviewing And I think every country is going to be different. But the plan is to return to that. Face-to-face remains where it's feasible and where it's affordable to the clients, the highest quality methodology for collecting complex data.
Mm. I think that one of the biggest worries I've got with regard to measurement in this crisis is to be honest, whether face-to-face interviewing will survive it. I mean, I'm heartened to hear that you're at least planning to go back to it in July. But I mean, there's a number of potential challenges. I mean, you've touched on one. The one is that this will undoubtedly the pandemic crisis will undoubtedly fold into an economic crisis, and clients not being able to afford it would be the first issue, because we were quite struck when we've been talking to TV jicks around the world, how few of them actually use face-to-face anymore. And it's only in the TV market, nearly everyone has moved their establishment survey to telephone online. There's a few exceptions like the UK you mentioned, but could this be a watershed moment where a lot of countries just don't go back to face-to-face? They just seek alternatives because they haven't got the money or the advertising revenue anymore to afford it?
I think affordability is the key issue. As you know, this has been, you know, questions have been asked about the cost of face-to-face for some years now, as response rates fall and it becomes harder to and more expensive to recruit people face-to-face. I don't think it's the end of face-to-face. As I say, I think we'll have to be looking to more hybrid methods. I mean, going back to the establishment surveys, I mean, the point about an establishment survey is you really want to do a household check, don't you? You want to see what you know, which channels they can receive, which devices they have. It's quite difficult to collect that information on telephone. So face-to-face, you know, where it's affordable remains to us, I think, the best way of doing it. But you're absolutely right. Money talks. So I think what we would probably see is perhaps a reduction in, well, perhaps a move to hybrid methods where face-to-face is currently 100%, and perhaps a change in the share of face-to-face versus other methods, you know, going forward. But no, I really do think that there's such a strong case for face-to-face, that it will be money that is, you know, that will reduce it, but I don't think it'll eliminate it.
Yeah, I mean, I've said and probably shouldn't have said that, you know, to a certain degree, most countries that have moved away from face-to-face to other methodologies, it hasn't been primarily a research excellence decision. It's been a pragmatic monetary decision.
A good example is the US, isn't it? I mean, this is not the readership study in the US, MRI survey of the American consumer, which is carried out by GFK. This is one of the last random probability face-to-face studies left that I'm aware of in that country. But the cost of administering it, the incentives they have to pay are very, very high. But that study has remained. So it's almost like a holdout. So a medium that needs this kind of high quality measurement. But, you know, it's a question of how long people are prepared to pay for that sort of thing.
I was struck by a couple of recent ASI papers while you were talking just then. One was obviously the one from your colleague in Italy for the establishment survey that won the best Nora paper
Schmidt.
From Nora Schmidt, talking about how what people said they had in their homes was often very different from what they did have in their homes when you actually were
exactly.
Looking to your earlier point. The other one was at the recent publishing and data conference in Lisbon, where I think I'm remembering rightly, was it Neil Farrer and Scott Jakeways talked about online first or second? And that was looking at complementing face-to-face with online. Part of me wonders whether one of the impacts of this may not be to kill off face-to-face, but actually shift the hierarchy where face-to-face is used not as the main contact, but part of a hybrid. It's used to contact people that you can't contact in other ways, as opposed to being a default supplemented by other methodology. It becomes a strategic tactical thing to use when you can't get someone online or by telephone, again, because of the cost.
Well, address-based sampling has got to be almost the best way you can sample, because houses tend to be fixed. So you can do a random sampling of households. Telephone numbers are much more problematic because, you know, there's now the move to mobile only, mobile mainly, the reduction in landlines. So telephone becomes a more difficult approach on which to have a decent sampling frame. Mail surveys, of course, they're address-based, but there's the problem of response on mail surveys. I mean, how many other online is difficult to have a random have a random probability approach, as far as I know. But yes, no, I think I agree with you. I think that I think it's the sampling part, the recruitment part of face-to-face that is really key. But in the collection of complex data that we talked about, what the Italians call the pantry check on the TBS survey. But there's also in a readership survey, the amount of information that we try to collect and the amount of publications we want to ask about make that pretty tough. And again, you want to show visual stimuli in some of those surveys, which is impossible to do on telephone. And it's possible to do online. I mean, I just think that it's having a mix of these approaches. I mean, readership measurement has inexorably moving towards one where we recruit at least part of the samples now using telephone, but we ask people to self-complete online. So now it's the next stage. That was to make the surveys device agnostic, because even surveys that are 45 minutes long that were not optimized for the mobile phone were still being filled in by the mobile phone. So, there's that move as well. So I think online surveys are getting better. Acceptance of online is getting better as people, you know, as younger people age, I suppose, and they're more the digital generation. So there's a lot of things going for that. I mean, in Belgium, we had an interesting thing. That was a face-to-face readership study, has been for a long time. And of course, when we stopped interviewing, they did want to know what was going on. None of the magazine and newspaper shops in Belgium closed during lockdown, and delivery remains the main method by which people get their daily newspaper. So the publishers wanted to continue measuring. So we did experiment. We tried actually using our face-to-face interviewers to recruit people by phone to do the study online on a self-complete basis. And so we did that on a sort of pilot basis last month. And we got reasonably comparable results. So it could be that that study becomes hybrid in the future. So instead of relying on face-to-face, and I apologize, I just said something wrong, 25% of that sample is panel-based for collecting leadership data, but the rest is face-to-face. So now we may be looking at a sort of three methods, a bit of panel, a bit of telephone recruitment, and a bit of face-to-face recruitment and self-completion. Mm. So a whole mishmash of different methods which suit each individual respondent accordingly.
I guess the other consideration going forward in the attraction of hybrid approaches is we have to acknowledge that this may not be a one-off, that we may have future pandemic crises, and clients will want reassurance that they're going to be in a better position to ride them out than they have been. Yeah, you know, this was entirely unforeseen. It's not unforeseen that in 3 years' time something else may roll in, and we as an industry need to prove that we've got the ability to, you know, adapt and have systems that don't just stop for 3 months because they're reliant on one methodology.
I think almost everybody will have learned this. I mean, this sort of thing has never happened before. So we now all know we must have a plan B. I think there has to be a plan B for every survey. So I think having 100% using a face-to-face, that's got to be re-looked at simply for continuity reasons, yes. So I think we're talking about, this is why, you know, I think now is perhaps a good time to test alternative methods, you know, while there's nothing else going on. And while fieldwork has stopped, and assuming people do want to know what's going on, testing alternative methods like the telephone or online would be a useful thing to do right now, so that people can see the impact of that.
I agree. I guess the one worry there would be that it's not going to be that indicative of what response rates you would get in normal times, is it? I mean, in terms of testing methodologies, you can test the process, but not get carried away. Certainly with the interviews we've been doing around TV panels, people are noticing much higher levels of compliance, much lower dropout, and coincidental checks are being answered first time because people are just desperate to speak to someone. But, yeah. So I agree, it's a great time to be experimenting, and also, you know, you've got staff who you mentioned it. I think in Belgium, the face-to-face interviews are repurposed to do telephone. You've got the opportunity to get staff to try new ways of doing things. So I think that's definitely a theme that's come through from the interviews that we've been conducting, and we'll be collating for something we're going to release next week. That in some ways there have been opportunities for the current citizen research companies to challenge some of the ways they were doing things, you know, in terms of what's been referred to as some of the sacred cows of research, and actually examine them and saying, well, is there a different way of doing that?
Yes, I mean, I think JICs are by their very nature slow to make decisions. You could even use that famous Churchill description of democracy. You know, it's the JICs are the worst form of governance, except for all the other forms of governance. They're slow because they need to be slow, because currencies are important. The stability, robustness, and quality of currencies are very important. So change cannot be undertaken lightly. And you've got to get everyone to agree, because media research is a treaty. You know, it's between all the interested parties. But the reason this is a good time to do it, even though response rates might be atypical right now in a good way, is because, as I say, nothing else is going on. I mean, nothing else is being measured. And perhaps they're interested in knowing what's going on. I mean, we've seen that the television audiences have been going sky high, and online usage to some extent has been going sky high. I don't think the story's always been so good for other media. But it varies. But again, if people want to know, this is pilot, this is testing. And you know, there's academic work that says that response rates do not necessarily have a major effect. You know, there's not a major non-response bias. I've seen some work that says that, you know, falling response a bit doesn't matter. And I think there's increasing acceptance of it. So if we did it, an experiment now with the telephone recruitment to one or other of our studies, and we got a 70% response, and then would we have no learning at all if natural response was 50 or 45? I don't know. But I think response rates are not the only measure of quality on a study. Mm. We don't learn something about how well we can ask a question, what our processes and systems are, and all that sort of stuff. So I think it was just a good thing to learn. I think, you know, the Belgian test was very useful, and I think they learned a lot, and we'll see what they decide to do going forward. And I think we've been discussing other methods, push to web, push to video. I mean, that you and I could be doing a face-to-face interview now. About my readership habits, for example. I mean, there are those kind of techniques that we could be testing. Now, do you think perhaps in the general population that overall acceptance of video conferencing might be a bit higher than it was a few months ago? These are all things we're talking about with all the JICs in the UK, for sure. Nothing specific, I think has been agreed to happen yet, but these are all ongoing discussions.
Well, it's one of the things we're actually planning to do a session with SMR. I think on the 19th they hold these sort of online video conference type things, where we'll be going through some of the findings of this. We'll let you know, we'll let listeners know how they can track down a link to perhaps listen. I think we're doing one for Eastern markets and one in the morning and one for Western markets in the afternoon, but essentially a 1.5 hour session, but we'll put some information about that in the show notes when we get it for this particular podcast. But I'm interested, obviously, what we've talked about has been a pretty good summary of the white paper that you've put out. And in that, you also talk about some of the alternatives that offer a way forward, a plan B, as you call it, in the white paper itself. One we haven't touched on quite so much has been the use of existing server data, or big data, as we used to call it before we got used to it. What role do you see going forward for Ipsos, particularly in terms of getting more involved in the processing of huge data sets that are augmented by research data, perhaps for demographics and things like that?
Well, obviously, we've done quite a bit of that in the out-of-home audience measurement area. So, we don't just do a travel survey by asking people to carry a meter around, which tracks their locations, sort of second by second over a 2-week period. But that's augmented massively by, we have traffic statistics. I think something like 120 different sources of data go into Route, everything from counting footfall and shopping malls, measuring traffic, pedestrians, passengers on trains and buses, and so on. So that's all, that's all lots of big data that's integrated and then merged with the travel survey to basically deliver the route data. So that's already a big part of out of home measurement. And we're developing a study now in France, which is inspired by Route, but has moved even further along. We're using synthetic population modeling and all sorts of complex things that you really can't ask me questions about because I don't understand them. But that's, and we've recently, we've won some other out-of-home measurement projects where that technology is going to be deployed. So that's one area. Another one is, of course, UCOM. So as you'll be aware, we recently won the UCOM business for measuring online audiences in the UK starting next year. And that also will involve the integration of big data sets with panel data, essentially. So that's ongoing. We've been doing that sort of thing on a smaller scale in several Southeast European countries, Croatia, Serbia, and a few others already for a few years. But the UK is going to be a much bigger bite. But those are essentially where we're using it. And a little bit, it's not really big data, but in Australia, we model readership of very small newspapers using combination of circulation data, census data, and some other bits and pieces, because a survey simply can't pick up tiny circulation newspapers in small areas. So a national survey just hasn't got the sample size. So we've used data science, if you like, in all sorts of ways in our surveys already. But I mean, there's going to be more scope to do that. Radio is going to need a lot more of that and other things.
Mm. Well, thanks for making time to talk to us today. We'll put a link to the white paper in the show notes. Listeners and viewers need not be worried. It's not an epic. It's a very readable cup of tea length paper to read, so we'll put a link up to that, and hopefully we'll speak to you when things are back to normal and not leave it another 107 episodes to
thank you very
catch
much
up with you. So thanks for your time, and okay. Speak to you soon.
Cheers. Bye bye.